Okay, everybody here, I'd like to call to order the regular meeting of the Water Waste Water Committee, and I will ask for a roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect all members are present.
And Ashley, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
All right, great.
I am.
Just want to confirm that Director Porter is with us via teleconference. And this is the time for public comment. If there's anybody on the line, who's monitoring our phone line? Just us?
Just us.
Is there anybody on the phone that would like to have any public comment? Is there any members of the public that are on the phone so I don't fail to recognize you? Okay, at this point, I don't hear anybody there. If there is nobody, I will one more time say this is the time for public comment for those items that are not listed on the agenda. Any comment? Okay, great. We will move on to approval of the minutes. Director Porter, would you like to make a motion?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
And I will second that. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
And the motion carries. And at this time, we have a presentation, water wastewater update. And I will invite whoever's giving us that update to come up and give it to us. It looks like it's going to be Gregory Harris. Am I supposed to have this on?
So Gregory Harris, Herbert Engineering, District Engineer for the Town of Discovery Bay. The water and wastewater update is on the D9 project, just to make the wastewater committee aware of schedule. We submitted the 90% drawings. 90% drawings and specifications last Friday to the town and Veolia for review and comment. The schedule is to complete the project, have those comments back by next week, and complete the 100% design by April 1st, and be out to bid on April 1st with the project. After that, the bidding is May 6th. There are the bid dates to receive bids. And then we'll, the board meeting after May 6th, I think it's the third week. We would come back for approval for the board for the bids for the new transportation project.
Greg, let me just stop a second.
Sure.
Director Porter, can you hear okay?
Yeah, I can hear.
Okay,
good.
Very good. Sorry,
Greg.
I just want to make sure she can hear. Go ahead.
All right. And then in parallel with the design effort, we have Mike Iraco working on the ISMND, the initial study mitigating negative declaration for the project, which is the CEQA document for the project that's required to be filed. The schedule on that is that they've gotten that document done. It's about to be posted on the websites and advertised. And they will be, after its circulation period, we'll be coming back to the board. And the document has been reviewed, bring a full item to the board sometime in April. So sometime in April, it's been up long enough, we're going to come back and look for a board adoption of the mitigating negative declaration. So
obviously it's a stupid, kind of a dumb question, but we don't anticipate any stumbling blocks, or is there anything questionable about that we...
I don't think so.
Okay.
We don't normally get
pretty
comments.
Standard.
Yeah, we don't normally get comments on the wastewater stuff. We don't normally.
Okay.
But if there are comments that are addressed in that response that you guys vote on.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So the public does have, if someone has a comment, by law it has to be addressed in the document that you guys approve.
Okay.
Okay. So that's just a quick wastewater update.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's big stuff coming up. Big stuff.
I have an update as well.
Okay, Dina, let's hear from you.
Okay, when we started with the D9 project, and when we brought it to the board for one of the first times, we brought design, the project cost, construction costs, and we also brought construction management. We approved the project, leaving out construction management. And the reason why we did that is because when it became time, we wanted to do a checks and balance of price comparison. So Gregory Harris of Herwitt Engineering was assigned to be construction manager. but we wanted to check, you know, his pricing and make sure he's keeping honest and just do a price comparison.
Sure.
As we kind of just did a down and dirty price comparison, we're looking anywhere from 10 to 15% of the project price just for construction management. The project construction is about almost $14
million. Right.
So there you're looking at $1.4 to possibly $2 million for construction management. So staff would recommend moving forward with Gregory Harris as the construction manager. We feel confident that he will do a good job, and working with the town, Mike Yaraka, myself, Aaron, and with Veolia, we've come into a nice group partnership, and I think we can move forward confidently with Gregory.
Yeah, as I recall, that was something the board had requested, just because it's a single source, and whenever there's a single source, we want to do our due diligence to make sure that we're looking at things from all angles. And I do recall that conversation at one time, and I appreciate you doing that due diligence. And I think I'll go to Director Porter for any comments, but my comments would be that I'm confident that in the amount of money that we're going to save, as well as the integral part of Greg also being the town engineer with oversight from Mike Yaraka and yourself, I think would be a good mix. Director Porter, do you have any comments on that?
No, actually, you kind of answered my question. I was going to ask if we had done any due diligence on other sources for that, but it sounds like that was done previously. I think if it's a good partnership and it's working, I think we continue doing that.
Great. Then I think with your consent, then we will recommend to the board, since the board did, it was a previous board, but the board is the board. And a previous board did ask for this to be done, and it would be the recommendation of this committee that we move forward with Greg Harris being the construction manager. You good with that, Ashley?
I am. I am comfortable with that recommendation.
Thank you.
Gregory Harris's construction and inspection services would be in the tune of around $650,000 or so. So,
don't let him know how much money he's saving us. So. Thank you for that. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate that. Okay. That's it for presentations. I'd like to move on to discussion items. Item one, water demand per well. Who am I going to hear from?
Justin,
are you on the phone?
Yes.
Hey, Justin, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm good. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing well. Speak clearly, because we have one director on the phone and the rest of us here in the room. Good to hear from you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Just let me know if you can hear me clearly or if I need to modify anything.
You're good. You're good.
Kevin,
go ahead.
And
sounds good.
Ashley. Okay, thanks. So this item, Kevin, this is just an informational item. For a comment you requested at the last meeting to provide kind of an overview of the wells in the system. And you were describing a table that would provide some history in terms of rehabilitation and capacity of the district's wells. So this isn't really project specific, though there are, of course, projects related to the wells right now that, you know, we could discuss in this item as well. But it's really just kind of a big picture or overview informational item for the water supply wells. So in response to your request, what I put together was these documents that we have for this discussion item, starting with the figure one, of which shows a map of the existing water system. Do you have that material?
I'm looking.
Ashley may not, if she's not.
I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but I'm going to listen very intently.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, first page is the map. And then what I would suggest is, Ashley, when you get a chance to look at it, it's a very interesting packet, and it is the diagrams that I thought you would be interested in seeing. And then if you have any questions, you can always call Justin and ask. You can always have a one-on-one with Justin, too, to explain if you need. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to do that, Justin. After I look, I look through the agenda and the packets and stuff like that, but I will probably reach out to you for us to have a one-on-one if you're okay with that.
Oh, absolutely. Not a problem. And I'm guessing you've probably toured the systems already with Aaron and probably Veolia, so you've probably physically seen some of these facilities.
Yes, I have.
That's good. That's good. And I'm going to be in town a bit over the next few weeks because there's a few projects taking place concerning the wells and filters and other, you know, assessments that are taking place. So if it would be helpful, also we could meet in person, socially distanced with masks and et cetera, to look at any of these facilities if you had specific questions.
I would appreciate that.
Yeah, Justin, yeah, please.
Let me know when you're in town.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that would be great.
I would like to know when you're around, too.
So,
go ahead.
Okay, sounds good. I'll leave that up to Dina and Aaron. I'll just make sure they know when I'm going to be in town.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what we have on the map is just an overview of the water system showing the pipe, you know, the pipes on the streets and what their sizes are. It's denoted by the number in the inch, 12 inch, 6 inch, 8 inch. Predominantly, we have 8 inch and 6 inch piping, some 12 inch piping. And then what's shown in kind of bold red is your raw water system, which is your supply wells. And that was kind of the focus of what this discussion item was. So we have 6 supply wells that currently exist in the system, and 3 of them are associated with the Willow Lake Water Treatment Plant, and 3 of them are associated with the Newport Drive Water Treatment Plant. So you can see that clearly on the map, how they're denoted with the spot target and the red pipeline that delivers the raw water. So that's just the overview on the map. The next sheet shows a table that provides some overview and information about the construction, the rehabilitation, the most recent installation of equipment in the wells, and some information about that equipment. So that's what this table is conveying, and it's organized by water treatment plant, because that's kind of how we think of the wells. We have the Willow Lake wells, and we have the Newport wells. So the Willow Lake wells are 1B, are numbered well 1B, well 2, and well 6, and the Newport wells are numbered well 4A, well 5A, and well 7. And from this table, you know, starting from the top down, I won't go through every item, but just the salient information here is up at the top where we have the drilling date, and that's the original installation, showing how old your wells are. So the oldest well in the system is well 2, which was 1971 drilling date, and the newest well is well 7, which is a 2014 drilling date. And then you also have well 6, which was 2009. And then you've got the remaining wells were in the 90s. So you essentially have, half of your wells are about 25 to 30 years old. 2 of your wells are on the newer side from about 5 to 10 years old or so. And then 1 well is about 50, a little more than 50 years old, or actually right at 50 years old. And so once wells, you know, start to get to that age, 50 years old, we start to think of them as being older wells with, you know, some plan for replacement. But also throughout that period of time, you have enough kind of knowledge about how those wells have operated to get a sense of if they've been problematic or might be showing kind of signs of wear or potential failure. And so it's not necessarily the case that the older wells are going to be the ones that get replaced, because there's a lot of things that go into what creates the aging and the failure of a well. That's not just purely age. So on this table, what we can see is where the rehabs have been conducted, and we've done rehabs on 4 of the wells, basically the wells that are in kind of the older category. The 2 newer wells, we obviously haven't rehabbed because they're fairly new. We haven't had any reason to go in. And what we've done to track these is every 2 years, we do drawdown testing. We test the pumps that are inside of the well to estimate or to determine the efficiency and the performance of the equipment, and to determine if the well itself is clogging and creating more drawdown to get that capacity out of it. And that parameter is called specific capacity, and there's a number here for these wells for specific capacity. And that's the number we really track to see if the well structure is starting to clog and in need of rehabilitation. So you can see your oldest well in the system, well two, that's 50 years old. We've been tracking specific capacity on that well for probably about 30 years or so. And because we don't have the original, you know, we weren't around when the original testing was being done. But for the last 30 years of data we have, it really hasn't changed that much. It's been a very reliable producer, is the way we've characterized it. Whereas well 1B, on the other kind of end of the spectrum, well 1B, which is about 26 years old, had an original specific capacity number that it's 23, which is gallons per minute per foot, and its latest test is 9, so which is a very substantial drop in performance. And that was the well in our previous committee meeting where we were talking about that project, which is a rehabilitation project for that well.
What do you anticipate? Obviously anticipate that number going up with the rehab then, is that correct? Cleaning out the filters or whatever the process is for making it more efficient, we expect that number to go up by a certain amount, I would hope, right?
Well, I mean, it's our whole intent of doing the rehab is to make that number go up. But that's not always the case. the mechanisms that cause it to clog are not necessarily physically accessible inside the casing. I mean, the clogging is occurring usually in the gravel pack or in the near formation area. So, we clean it with chemicals and methods for scrubbing and also surging to put, you know, to lower pH and put chemicals that help dissolve buildup that's creating that. So it could be a chemical buildup, like oxidation reaction of chemical level that will kind of build on the gravel pack, but it could also just be a filling in of finer material from the aquifer that's just natural material that's kind of filling in the gravel pack, which we can't really dissolve with chemicals. So there's different things that create a well to clog over time, and you never get 100% of the capacity back. That's for sure. But we hope to get some back. And what we saw when the rehab was done in 2011 was it didn't increase that number. It stayed at around, well, at that time it was around 10 or 11. So we just kept monitoring it, and this last time we tested it, it was down at 9. And we said, well, you know, it's going down. And at this point, when it's this low, this, you know, it's beyond a 50% reduction of the original capacity. We decided now is the time to really do it and give it everything we got. So I would say that the methods that we're applying this time are more rigorous, and there's more labor hours in terms of how much time we're going to have a well driller working on this well, and we'll have a geologist on site making the observations of how much material we're removing, and pretty much making decisions in real time. If we feel we can get more benefit by extending the rehab, providing, you know, adding more chemicals and more labor, we'll make that decision in real time, because we really do want to get a better result this time around.
Justin, I'm sorry to interrupt, but go ahead, Ashley. Go ahead.
I have a question. Do you have the ability to kind of estimate what causes a well to start to be reduced in production, and why is there such a huge variance between them?
Well, the reasons that cause it are associated with with chemistry and with physical, you know, just physical mobilization of material in the aquifer by pumping so much water around it. And I don't know that we could estimate for any given well what it, you know, I would have to bring in one of our hydrogeologists for a question like that. And I could certainly work on a question like that and get a response to you, but I don't think that I would probably do it justice if I made an attempt right now. That's okay.
Let me.
But there's a lot of factors.
That's fair.
Let me ask you this, Justin. I mean, that's part of the reason for the rehab, is to find out why we're being reduced. And we're going to know some of those answers once the rehab. When's the rehab scheduled for?
Well, it's starting to take place now. So we've removed the pump.
Oh, okay.
And, that part's out. We are doing, on Friday, an initial video survey of the well casing. So we'll run a camera down and we'll, you know, just get a visual observation on what we see in terms of scaling. So if we see scaling on the inside of the seal, that's kind of indicating one type of a hardness or calcification buildup. Sometimes in wells we'll see a slime, or growth that's more indicative of a iron bacteria, a bacterial type of clogging. Those we haven't seen so much in Discovery Bay, which we're lucky for, because when we have bacterial type of iron bacteria issues, it's usually very, very aggressive and reoccurring. So you end up getting into very frequent rehab cycles with wells that have those problems. But like I was saying, a lot of the clogging is not what you can visibly see with your eye. It's behind the casing, in the gravel material and in the aquifer that's very near the borehole.
And just for Director Porter's benefit, as well as to remind myself, are we concerned about the location of well 1B? Because as I recall, there's another well that's capped right near where 1B is, which is 1A. And we have problems with that, and that's why we moved. We drill another. I'm trying to recall. It's been a while since I've gone through this stuff. Is that correct? Is that right, Aaron?
There is a well 1A that was.
I mean, it's just like 50 feet away or something. It's not that far away.
It's in a building.
So I'm wondering if the location is the issue, and I'm wondering if long term we should be looking at an alternate location to feed Willow Lake water treatment because of the reduction in production. And I'm talking long term. I'm saying, hey, maybe 15, 20 years down the road, that we're not going to be able to use that site anymore, because apparently that site may have an issue. But I'm just throwing that out there for long term vision that we should think about and put into some sort of our general plan somehow. I don't know if we have done that. And maybe we don't need to do that. I'm just kind of putting logical things together. We've had some problems with that site.
Yeah. Within the CIP, there is a contingency that we've made for a replacement well, so that there's a budget set aside for that. And we're currently reviewing the CIP budgets, and that specific question came up, too, as to whether we would, we should make sure that if there is a contingency well budget, it's based upon a new well site, and not necessarily putting a replacement well on an existing well site. Because just like you said, if there's a reason why we're abandoning a well, in some cases, the reasons for why that well is abandoned might preclude that site from being a good site.
Yeah, I would not, that, I mean, I would
not
use...
Not in all cases.
No.
So I would say that should be reviewed by, our hydrogeologists and our well experts. Should be the ones who conduct the site review at that time, historical issues on the site, and make recommendations from that point.
Yeah, but I would use 5A, for example. I would not dig another well at 5A with all the problems we had with that location, with salinity and everything else. So let's keep that in mind moving forward. Okay, thank you. Go ahead with your presentation. I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you have more for us?
No, it's okay. I mean, it's a discussion item. I mean, I just wanted to kind of go over the table in enough detail so you saw kind of the relevance of the information that we're putting on here. So as much more of that as you think might be helpful,
I guess I can keep going. Well, I think what would be helpful is for both Director Porter and I to review this packet a little more in depth now that you've given us some background, now that we can kind of understand, we can take a look at the dates, take a look at the productions. And then maybe at that point we would have some more questions for you, and when you're out here, maybe we can have some more discussion on it.
Yeah.
How does that sound,
that
Ashley?
That would be good.
I agree. I think that sounds good. I'd like to take a look at it a little bit more in depth and have my questions ready to ask you.
Great. Great. Yeah, and I'll follow up with Scott Lewis, who's our principal geologist and is in charge of the well construction rehab project. And I'll just ask him if he could provide kind of a general discussion of the mechanisms that result in clogging of the well structure, just to give you a better kind of just technical description of that.
Yeah, whether it's a geological thing or whether it's a mechanical thing or whether it's a pump thing or, you know, if we have any better idea. I mean, and it may not be detectable. We may not be able to see that from 250 feet above it, you know?
Right, right.
Anything else, Dina?
Absolutely. So, Justin, if you want to give me those dates that you laid out here, I can organize with Director Graves and Director Porter for a future date, meet and greet, okay?
Did you get that, Justin?
Yep.
Okay.
Great.
Look forward to seeing you. Thanks for the presentation, Justin.
All right.
Does he have more for us, or is he done?
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Hey, thanks for being on. You can leave, or you can hang around and listen to wastewater if you want.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Justin. All right. Item number discussion item two, Chicchini Ranch.
That'll be Gregory Harris.
Mr. Harris.
I don't know what to tell you, buddy.
Gregory Harris, District Engineer, County of Fairbanks. Okay, so you may recall that Chicchini Ranch has approached Discovery Bay and requested essentially hookups and costs for hookups and things, and they're pursuing a development through the county.
This is like 1,100 homes over here or something like that?
Yes, right, actually 2,000.
Is it that many?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's 2,000 plus over there.
Wow.
And that's next to Plant 1, right? And just north of Highway 4 there, just across street from Tree Plant number 2.
Right.
So they entered into a reimbursement agreement with the Town of Discovery Bay so that they could engage Justin and myself to try and estimate what it would cost for them to connect and hook up to the town, what infrastructure would they needed, some things like that. And that was executed a while back. Mike and Rock has been kind of taking the lead with Chicchini Ranch and that development group. And so we started doing some work on that. And as I was bringing results back to the wastewater group, our weekly wastewater group, questions started coming up. And we decided that we needed to come talk to the wastewater committee and get some direction on how best to interface with Chicchini Ranch. So basically what was going on is Herbert Engineering was sort of following the typical track of, okay, Chicchini Ranch is on the north side of Highway 4. We decommissioned Plant 1, moved everything to Plant 2 as part of this denitrification project. We'll tear out Plant 1 and we'll make Chicchini Ranch rebuild Plant 1 and we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm.
But as we started going through the motions and putting cost to things, we started talking to Veolia and Mike Uraka and Tina and Aaron. And questions were coming up of, if we're really going to add more facilities, why don't we add them to Plant 2? And then also things like, Chicchini doesn't fill a full oxidation ditch kind of thing. They don't quite fill a whole one. Would we really make one smaller? Just to accommodate them to save money, but then hamstring the district if there's any other developers in the region that may want to come into the plant. And we recognize that basically we had questions that revolved further analysis and sort of direction before we could even do analysis. And so we stopped working on the cost estimates for Chicchini Ranch. We had developed some preliminary costs to rehab and basically tear out Plant 1 and build a new plant there. As well as things that are needed at Plant 2. But we also recognize that there's some free ridership going on between facilities at Plant 2. For instance, the UFFE facilities are all at Plant 2. And if I'm able to figure out a way to not have to expand the UV facility, and that saves Chicchini Ranch money, but then again, they didn't participate in building it in the first place. So, you know, there's a capacity fee in place in the town of Discovery Bay, but that envisions the developer just pays the capacity fee and doesn't build his own infrastructure and do things like that. So we recognize that we're getting into a lot of hybrid discussions about what about this, what about that, and what seemed like initially a while, 3-4 months ago when they started this, a fairly straightforward discussion has gone into are we going to stop and even consider the long-term needs of the town of Discovery Bay before we answer their question?
Now, let me just comment on that for a minute. So interesting. First of all, did you play baseball when you were a kid? Because you threw a lot of curveballs, you know. Just a month ago, we were talking about plant one, and now that's coming off the table all of a sudden. But I love where you're going with this, because we purposefully built more production into our more recent additions to the plant to compensate for additional growth. But at that time, Cicchini Ranch wasn't even discussed.
Right.
It was half of it was going to the county, and what's his name's place felt that whole concept fell apart, and it wasn't part of our plan.
Right.
So yes, it has to be considered how much benefit they're getting from existing production or existing facilities. And then how much is it going to cost to add facilities?
Right.
And with Veolia's input, it seems like we keep moving forward towards, it's kind of like the fire department, we keep moving towards consolidation.
Yes.
We keep moving forward towards, hey, it's easier for it to be maintained if it's in one location. It's easier for us to move the product in one location instead of two separate locations. We have land out there,
yes.
I don't want the current ratepayers to be taken advantage of because of our, you know, we built some extra. We had to build redundancy into the program, which gave us more capacity than we needed.
Yes.
And they shouldn't take advantage of that. They should be fairly treated for it, but they should not be taking advantage of the current ratepayers. The current ratepayers paid a lot of money for redundancy because we had to have it.
Yes.
We had to have a place where we could, if we had to shut something down, we had something to use, so everything worked. That redundancy could work to an advantage to a new developer, but we need to make sure that they pay their fair share. So I like where you're going with this. It does seem to be rather complicated. Is there some direction you need from the committee at this point?
Well, the direction that I would request from the committee is that we were proceeding on the essential marching orders of figure out how to get Cicchini in here, I'll say, as cheap as possible, right? Okay. And now we're looking at, okay, we need to stop and balance the town's interests with Cicchini's interests. In developing a plan and developing costs.
I would rather state the fact that we need to look at bringing Cicchini in as fairly as possible, fairly for them and fairly for us.
Right.
Go ahead, Ashley.
I agree with that. No, I was just going to chime in and say I agree with that. I think it needs to be fair for both, but I also think we need to be conscientious of what you were saying, Kevin, the current ratepayers. I mean, and what they're having to pay at this point.
Yeah, exactly, Ashley. We don't want to charge a future developer for something that they're not using because it's being used by the current ratepayers. But likewise, we don't want the current ratepayers to be paying for something that a future developer is going to
be
using.
Right.
Now, whether they could still use the same drying sheds and whether they could still use the same water presses and they can, all that process, we could still handle a capacity, or are we going to have to build new sheds and new water presses?
Yeah, so that's sort of the analysis
I guess my other question on that is, like, we're thinking kind of future ahead, but are we thinking future ahead of, okay, well, it's going to cover, they have enough capacity to cover currently and what's potentially going to build, but is that going to leave us room to grow more, or are we going to have to at some point even have more capacity?
Right. Now, we could only plan up to our urban limit line. We can't anticipate the county extending our urban limit line to the point where we are blending into Brentwood. You know what I'm saying? Or blending into can't go into Never County. Well, could, but you know what I'm saying. So I think we need to stay obviously within where our urban limit line is. And Cicchini Ranch was part of that. That's why they're being looked at by the county, or why I think it's already being approved by the county, isn't it?
It's in some process. There's discussions.
There's discussions. It's moving. It's moving forward because there's major dollars being invested in it. So yeah. This is going to happen. I think.
But we don't.
Go ahead.
I would offer that our lines can still our SOI spirit influence and our jurisdictional boundaries can move upon request upon approval by LAFCO. I mean, we're doing that now with Newport Point Development, and we're doing that, and then we're going to have to do that with Pantages. They're not even in our jurisdictional boundaries right now. Now, we have capacity in our current plant for that, but if you look at where we're situated right now and the fact that we're even servicing all the way up to Timber Point School for some services, there is land that's going to be between our Newport Water Plant and where the Newport Point development's going to be that could be potentially developed with more houses. So we have, even though that's not occurring today and we're only looking at our boundary, those things could very easily develop.
Well, the problem is this. You're talking about developments over here that may be 80 to 100 to 150 homes, which couldn't afford to put in a new sewage. And then you're looking at 2,000 homes where they can disperse that money over a larger population. So we want to make sure we're not robbing future development there too. Is that what?
Correct.
Okay. So we've always built, Greg, you've always designed these things to build in a certain amount of excess to plan for what we need to plan for. And I think that's what we just have to be concerned about.
Right. So the big play is this. If we put new facilities into plant one, you have a finite capacity limit there and a finite footprint and maintenance issues between plant one and plant two. If we say, forget that, if it's new, it's in the best interest of the district to put it into plant two, anything new goes into plant two, then I think about the problem differently. And we would set up so that we would expand south of the sludge lagoons and take that land behind there, and then you'd have future growth capacity however you want. So that's kind of what we're talking about is, one option, plant one's very close to them, it's real cheap to slide right in there, but in reality, if you look at the holistic approach, the best interest of the district is do it all at plant two and figure out how to get them into plant two, make the improvements there, and then you have room to grow and put in the facilities you need there.
So, I think we have to look at what's best for the overall health of Discovery Bay and the overall, and that would be to expand plant two as opposed to rehabbing plant one, in my personal opinion. I, you know me, I was the other way around for a long time. For years, I was fighting to get plant one back open back up, right? But I think now at this point, with that project coming on board, I think it would be better to centralize it for our contractor as well as for our own staff. And my concern would be that, you know, I don't know, but you know, or you can find out, we have an excess capacity that we carry all the time because we have to, because we just don't know what the future, we don't have to. So that excess capacity, whether it be a percentage or a number or whatever it is, has to be maintained through whatever we do for Chicchini Ranch.
Right.
They can't have that extra capacity and add to it. That extra capacity has to be built into...
What's important about that is, because we got a redundancy now in place when we built Ox Ditch 4 over at Plant 2, we'll have three ditches, right? Part of the D9 project, we approved that. Once we do that, there is excess capacity there. And here's what's going to happen. I'll say every development, when it starts out, even like when Hoffman started out, you don't start out with 2,000 homes. You start out with one home, right?
Right.
And you got to sell it, and you can sell number two, right? Well, that sewage has got to go somewhere, and you can't afford to build a plant on the back of two houses, right? So inherently, someone wants to use your capacity initially to feed into those beginning homes, right?
And that's fine.
And then, if you tell me, Greg, I know there's extra capacity in that plant, but I don't want you to give it over to Chicchini. I want you to make Chicchini build all their stuff the way they need it. Okay, that's direction. That's understanding, kind of thing. Because, like I said, I can do a lot of things. If it's like, make it as cheap as possible, I can make it as cheap as possible.
So you bring up an interesting scenario, though. Because let's say... there's just no way that they could build that. Let's go back to early 2000s when developments just ceased production in the middle. I mean, you saw foundations for miles
right.
with no sticks on them because the economy tanked. I mean, so in essence, they could build 10 houses, the economy tanks, and now, so I would look at it more in, and this may be wrong, but this is layman's terms, I would look at it more as they're borrowing capacity from our existing situation as they progress through the project. Right. In other words, the first 100 homes may end up coming through our existing system as we build the system for them, but their connection fees, their, what do we call them? Their
connection fees.
Your connection fees are going to be based on building a new plant.
You know, for instance, just so everyone understands, based on
so really they're paying rent for a while.
Right. Based on the scale of their development and your current connection fee, if it was not changed, you're looking at $30 million for wastewater would be their connection fee. Like if they said, turn it on tomorrow, they'd write you a check for $30 million. Now, that's what we're trying to understand is that's your
so what's that quick math? $60,000? No, $6,000 at home?
No, it's 12.
12,000?
2,500 homes in. They're putting 2,500 EDUs in on paper right now. That's what they've asked us to look at.
Okay.
And so that's $30 million. Now, the real thing is if they reuse something that we don't have to expand, then they need to credit the existing people that paid for that money, right? So the district still charges that money, and you pay off bonds, or you do whatever you want.
A bond or something like that, right.
You pay down a bond with it,
right.
Or, you know, what you're ever going to do. And it just can be, you know, a tricky analysis because I have to understand, what am I optimizing? I have to understand what is it cheapest? Is it the best interest of the district? Is it the district? But at the end of the day, you want your capacity, your ed reserve capacity held. That's a good criteria of the way you stay.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, or are you willing to sell off some of that reserve capacity just for cash? You know, like if I say they can hand you $5 million or $6 million and float the first half of their, you know, first 500 units and give you $6 million. You don't have to do anything for that first.
But at the end, we'd get that reserve back.
But then you got to decide how you want to do the rest. Like, do you want it back or do you want the cash? Exactly. You know, that's what we have to decide on. And so we're not trying to answer it all today.
No.
But what did become clear is the direction we were headed down doesn't appear to be.
No, I agree.
Of the town of Scott.
But it's about as clear as the water in the ox ditch to me right now. So.
But two big things. One is. If there's a general agreement that it all goes into Plant 2, that changes entirely the approach.
How do you feel about that, Ashley?
Sorry, I was on mute.
I'm
comfortable with that. I think it's a good plan. I think, you know, it's better to plan ahead, but be ahead a little bit than fall behind it. And then we're like, oh, great, we should have done this 5 years ago.
Historically, we had questions about what are we going to do with Plant 1. Veolia has always been a big fan of Plant 1 disappearing, just going off the edge of the earth. But and I tend to be on their in their court at this point, and I fought it for a long time. I just think that we have the opportunity with this new with the new developer coming in of such large. I mean, we're only 6,500 homes now, and they're adding another 30% to our population.
Yeah.
I think that this is the opportunity for us to consolidate our plant into one location. It would get rid of some other issues that some of the people over in the country club have depending on the direction the wind's blowing, and it's so close to the residents over there that everything would be on the south side of the road, and I think it might be the time to just. To look at it from that perspective of putting everything at Plant 2. If that's your recommendation, I would agree with that.
Yeah, well, that's certainly the request from some people in the wastewater group, you know, and I think in terms of where you'll have the most room for unknown growth way down the road in the district, if it's all at Plant 2, then you'll have the safe space to do it.
Well, we bought lots of land over there, so.
Yeah, the other thing is this, it takes a lot of money, as you know. This D9 project's gonna be the most expensive project the district's ever built. Hoffman spent more money when he built Plant 2 from scratch, okay? But that was 22 years ago when he did that, and he spent $30 million back then.
And we've been fixing it ever since.
Yeah, exactly. but this one project's going to be expensive, and the real thing is you need enough homes to truly do big picture, let's do this here versus there kind of stuff.
Well, that's what I'm looking at.
Everybody else is too small to tag for, you know what, we want this, so we want to move the entire process.
Well, it would just make it, we would, what we're doing is we're inadvertently taking a land use authority that we don't have. I mean, if right. we just tell them we can't do it and so they can't build, I mean, that's really not, we're not supposed to be doing that. We're right. supposed to be providing services.
We're supposed to provide services, yeah.
Right.
Mike was mentioning to me, Mike D as well as Mike Uraka, about reclaimed water is going to become a bigger issue as they want us to reclaim water. And that's going to factor into here. The wastewater groups talked about doing a wastewater reclamation plan, you know, and then that might entail maybe we still do something with Plant One for that reclamation.
You're talking about like purple pipe stuff?
Yeah, but we're talking purple pipe. And so it all interrelates, but the long and short of it is, we think originally we had the blinders on, go do mission one, and we don't think that's the right mission now. And if you agree with that, then we're going to slow down.
I agree with that.
Talk to TPD and let them know, and then try and bring in some bigger picture planning.
And I think that we should be very, I use the term loosely, progressive, in looking at exactly reclaimed water and requirements for that within the parks and things that are going to be developed for Chicchini. Where we don't have, it's too expensive at this point to bring it back across.
Right.
And the water users that would use it are getting too cheap of water from the Delta.
Yes.
But in the new project, that needs to be built in.
Right.
Okay, no, you're not going to pump water in from the Delta. You're going to use water coming out of our plant.
Right, yes.
Good idea.
And all that's got to be coordinated. So if you agree with that, then the direction to us is, hey, look at everything Discovery Bay needs as you come up with planning. And you agree with the decision that Plant 2 is probably the best place.
Okay. Can I hear from Dina for a minute? Yeah. So, Dina, you've been the one that's been involved in all these meetings with your crew, with Aaron and Mike Urock and Craig. And are you on board with the direction we're talking about here? Is this something that you would recommend to staff?
I recommend this to staff.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because this is new to us. So I'm here I am sitting down with the information I got for 5 minutes. And. And making a definite strategic change in how we're moving forward. So I want to make sure that
I think it's a very smart change, and it's a change that will bring us farther into the future than the little map one that we might be
okay.
looking at.
All right, do you have your direction, Greg? Or?
Yeah, if both of you say yes, proceed that way, I have to do it.
Okay, is there anything else that you want to share with us on that?
Not on that topic.
Okay, do you have the next topic also?
No.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Thank you for explaining that, though, in a way that's very was very understandable and that we could absorb. Appreciate that. Dina.
All right. So all that.
Gee, made Christmas. I forgot what this freaking committee was like.
A lot.
Go ahead.
We're doing a lot.
Go ahead.
So that was a perfect segue into my conversation that I brought up into the group that we talked about is actually doing a capacity and connection fee study. We haven't done one since 2014, and with all of this, all of these changes, new development, you know, how we changed from Plant 1 to Plant 2 now, I think we need to revive that. And so I would like to have a recommendation to bring that to the board at a future date. I've already asked Finance Manager Carter to add it to the budget for next year. So.
Okay, I think that would make sense because that would bring into play Chicchini Ranch also, right? And so we can get a better idea of what we're paying for and what they're paying for through the study also, correct?
It would have them pay their fair share. It would look at what we have facilities now and what's already being
now,
paid for by existing.
Newport Point and Pantages are locked in.
They're in.
Because we've contracted or we've given them for their pricing. But any future growth in areas that Mike talked about, although I find that's directly underneath the power lines, isn't it? The area you're talking about, Mike?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But anyway, who knows? Who knows what people will do? And there may be an apartment complex that is going to want to go in here.
That's exactly
someplace
right.
That's going to have a lot more EDUs per square feet because we've gone three stories or something. If it's
or maybe fed in from Marsh Creek Road commercial.
Yeah, who knows? So we need to look at that. So what do you think, Ash?
I'm okay with that. I think that's something that we should probably do on a fairly regular basis.
Okay. Any other? Oh, yeah. So listen, I've been very This is a problem. I've been very bad about that because there nobody spoke up when they were when I asked if there was anybody there. But there might be somebody now on the line that wants to make public comment on any of these three items we just discussed. Is there anybody on the line that I've apologetically neglected to ask? Is there anybody there that would like to make comments on this? Good, I didn't hurt anybody's feelings then. I apologize for... thank you, Michael, for that. All right, no public comment on any of those. You got direction on that. We want you to bring that back to the board. You are going to look at who we've used in the past and maybe get some other pricing on who we're going to and bring a proposal forward, okay? And item four is we have expanded now into the galaxy, and we have Orion with us. So. Welcome, Aaron.
Hello. So, I just brought material regarding the Orion readers. I handed it to you. You should see it. It looks like this.
Yeah. And the Orion readers are they sending units for the for our water consumption?
So it's a reader that's attached to the meter.
Right.
That's what collects the information off the meter and puts it onto. Our building software can pull the reads off of it.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Notifications for leaks.
Am I supposed to have
a... Yeah, I gave it to you.
Oh, you get... That's right. It was separate. A single peak. What happened to that? There it is. I'm sorry. So you probably don't have this, Ash, but anyway, go ahead, Aaron.
No, I don't. I can grab it. I'll be there shortly.
Okay.
Okay, so... so this was a meeting that I had with Badger Friday last week.
Yeah.
And they gave us a one-time offer for this year of upgrading our old Orion readers to the newer ones. And
settle down.
I haven't broken down here a little bit in the years and the amount of the units that we purchased for that year. Those are just estimated. They're pretty close, but those are estimated units for that year. And then to the right of that, I have the warranty years remaining. So. For 2014 and 15, there's already only 3 or 4 years left in that warranty remaining. And then as we get...
So these are replacement. These are for replacement of existing units.
These are what we have purchased in those years, 2014, 15, 16, 17. This was before the meter project on this side of town. This is what we installed on the other side of town that already had meters.
Mm-hmm.
Except for 2017, those are the amount of these Orion CDMAs that we purchased in 2017 for the meter project. During that meter project, they gave us these LTE M meters, so they upgraded us from the CDMAs, well, they quit making the CDMAs, and they upgraded to the LTE M meters. So half of this side in the meter project got the LTE Ms and the Orion 3G readers. So they reached out to us because we were an early participant in this for their readers, and... The CDMA readers, they're older, they read once an hour, they read 24 times during the day, and they only connect to the cell network one time a day. So you can only get hourly reads on that meter per day.
Mm-hmm.
It has a 10-year warranty, it's prorated the back half, so the last 5 years of that warranty is a 50% cost of the retail cost of the endpoint. And those readers are now at $300. So if we had to do any warranty work on these ones that are older than 5 years, we would pay $150 to replace that reader.
Okay.
The CDMA network is not covered, which is the 3G network, is not covered under that warranty. And what it is, it's the 3G network that they're now shutting down. They're sunsetting that cell network as T-Mobile and Verizon and all those companies are making way for 5G, they're taking 3G offline sooner than what everybody expected. So there's a chance that the ones that we purchased in 2017 that have
won't be sending anything.
Won't be sending any information. The ULTM readers, they read 4 times an hour. They read every 15 minutes, which is a benefit to us because it helps and the residents. It gives them earlier leak detection. Three of those 4 times a day that it reads the meter, we can actually I'm sorry, it reads every 15 minutes on the hour, so it reads a total of 96 times a day. It reports to the cell network 4 times a day, and 3 of those times a day we can actually set ourselves. So if the office opens up at 8:30 in the morning, we can have them calling in at 8:30 in the morning. So if somebody calls in at 9 a.m., we have up to hour for that.
Okay,
that
so it doesn't have to be equal.
It doesn't have to be equal every.
Okay, I got you.
24 divided by 4, whatever that is.
So a couple questions. So you have 4,492 units to upgrade, but we have more meters out there than 4,492.
Right. So from 2014 to 2017, half of 2017, we received 4,500 of these O'Brien meters, of these CDMA 3G readers.
Okay.
O'Brien upgraded their own readers in the middle of 2017. That was in the middle of
To
the LTE M's.
Okay.
So we have roughly another 1,500.
So we have 1,500 to 2,000 of the new ones already installed. Yes. That already have the capability of doing what you're telling me.
Yep.
Because they came in the middle of the water meter project.
Correct.
So Old Town actually has upgraded readers as opposed to the newer side of town, huh?
Yeah, so if you were to look at the phases of the meter project.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
The numbers of those phases would have the newer endpoint.
So in the middle of the project, they changed. Okay, so you're wanting to upgrade.
I'm looking to upgrade them. I think it's a good idea. They offer us a really good. It's almost a quarter. It's a quarter of the price of what a new meter is. A new meter is $300. They offer to upgrade us for $57.50 per unit.
Do you know what we paid per unit during the water meter project for that same reader?
We got a discounted price, and we paid $115.
So this is still half that price.
It's still half that price. But if I was to do, let's say, if I was to pull one out that's out of warranty right now and send it in for warranty work, I would have to pay $150 to have it replaced. Plus the labor.
And on top of that, they're going to be obsolete with regards to being able to send. We're going to be forced into this at some point anyway. Is that correct?
If the 3G network goes down, yes.
We're at the mercy of the providers.
Let's say CDMA goes down and with a couple years left on 2017, that means I would have 1,500 meters.
Let's say Verizon's providing us the 3G network that we're using right now. How do we pay for that?
We have a monthly bill that's 90 cents a line, 90 cents a line, I think.
90 cents per reader?
Per reader a month.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Do we get free phones for the town because of that or something? I mean, that's
ridiculous.
Sometimes. Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
That's
ridiculous. So
are we using Verizon for that? Okay. All right. So I got your drift, Aaron. What? Tell me your timelines on this.
So I would like to get this going as soon as possible. So I'd like to either bring this back up with more detailed information for the committee meeting. I'd really like to bring it to the next, not tonight, but next 2 weeks from now, waterways board meeting.
Well, as I was reminded earlier by our assistant general manager, I'm also on the finance committee, and I don't recall seeing this go through the finance committee. How is it? I'm sorry, Ashley. Did you have any questions?
Yeah, I actually do have a couple of questions. Aaron, have we had a conversation with O'Brien about kind of what their updating of this equipment is? I mean, is this something that we need to plan and budget for year over year or every 2 to 3 years? And what's the expense? I may have missed this and I apologize, but what's the expense that we're looking at overall of replacing those? And is that being passed on to the consumers, or is that something that is going into our town budget?
So this is over. This is. Just like the meters are part of the monthly service fee that's on the meter bills. So it's kind of like in the replacement program. So if one goes bad, we replace it. It would come out of that.
Yeah, that was built into the original financing.
Yeah.
Okay.
When we put them,
so no, but nobody. I mean, we're not going to add extra expense to replace them.
No,
nobody's going
to. We're adding extra expense, but we're not adding extra charges to the community for it.
That was already...
Nobody's going to get hit with an additional charge on their bill. They're already paying into a reserve fund that's going to finance this, would that be correct in saying that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
No, again, are we budgeting to replace these on a fairly regular basis? Because it sounds like the technology is changing fairly quickly.
Yeah, the technology, the LTE-M, they warranty for 20 years. That's including the cell network. So, but the back half of that 20, so the 10 years of that 20 is going to be prorated. And so, like year 11, for example, I have on here is a 70% discount on that. And every year into that warranty, you knock off 5% discount. So then year 12 is 65% discount on the retail price.
This is something that gets built into our rate study every time. When we do our next rate study, there'll be a replacement cost that's built into that, so that when we have to do a rate increase, that will be part of the reason for it. But it won't be anything that anybody gets hit with individually at this point. It's just part of normal wear and tear on the infrastructure is basically what it is. It's just like the pipes wearing out.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thanks, Ashley. So you're looking for a recommendation from the committee to move this forward to the board. Is it in the budget? Is this part of our infrastructure replacement? Are we good?
Yes. Everything that I've checked, yes.
Dina, you can answer from there.
It's not part of infrastructure replacement, but we do charge an account charge. And so everybody gets charged an account charge on an annual basis. It goes onto the tax roll, and that includes fixing meters, replacing readers, all that stuff. So we can take a look at that and make sure that we have the funds. I do believe that we do, but we'll check with Julie.
What's our next rate study?
Our next rate study is not for 5 years.
Yeah. But we have a reserve fund.
We do have a reserve fund.
Yeah, this would be, I think that I would be willing to recommend that we go ahead and update those before we have a problem sending out, before we end up having a guy in a truck going around reading meters because we can no longer send out.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of over barrel on this one.
Yeah, and I think in the future it would be prudent for us to put maybe when the 10-year warranty starts to actually have that maybe as a capital item. And just to prepare ourselves for in 10 years, we might have to do this again. So,
something to put down on the list.
Yeah.
Anything else, Ashley? If not, I'm going to move forward.
No, I think that answered all my questions.
And you're okay with moving forward with the recommendation from the committee to have this brought to the board for a decision?
Correct. So will it go to the board or will it go to the finance committee first?
We want to get moving.
It's going to go to the board. It's going to go to the board first because the finance committee is just going to rubber stamp it at that point because we don't have a choice. I shouldn't say that.
Okay.
I've already asked the questions that the finance committee is going to ask, and I'm comfortable with that. It's really a relatively small amount to come out of our reserves. That's what our reserves are for. And I think that would be the recommendation the Finance Committee would make also, if that answers your question. Okay, good.
It does, thank you. Thanks.
Is there any public comment on that particular item? And you all know that Orion is a galaxy in the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, for all the sci-fi nerds out there. Okay, is there anything else? I see nothing else on the agenda. Is there any future agenda items that anybody has? I imagine D-Night's going to be a future agenda item every meeting, but hearing none, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.